Everything Todd Hoffman touches turns to gold. It appears that way, at least, from his hit Discovery Channel series, Gold Rush. More than 10 years ago, tucked away in the small town of Sandy, Oregon, Todd envisioned a concept that allowed him to dig out of the financial and professional hole he found himself, and in spite of Hollywood experts telling him he couldn't do it, became one of the biggest reality TV stars and producers of the last decade. You're about to get a behind-the-scenes look into the reality that is reality star Todd Hoffman, my friend who went from Sandy to gold.
So I'm here with my buddy Todd Hoffman, and everyone who's seeing Todd right now recognizes his face, one of the most recognizable faces on cable television for many, many years, because he is a self-made celebrity. And when I say self-made, this is a man who put it all together from the very beginning, and now he has a fan base that gets bigger and bigger every year. He has proven to be not only a great visionary and an innovator, but an entrepreneur that people are always seeking advice from and wanting him to get involved in their ventures because he's proven he knows how to do it. So, Todd Hoffman, welcome to Game Face Execs.
Dude, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Did you write all that down on that? On a little card or cue card, or what did you do there, Rob?
I know you so well, Todd. I've got 10 intros for you. I didn't know which one to pick. But So, Todd, you're in your home right now in Oregon, and that's where you and I met, was back in Oregon, because we're both Oregonians. We were both born and raised. Actually, not too far from each other, but that's not how we met. We met later in life as professionals. I just want to let the audience know that over the last several years, I think you and I have been friends for probably 8 years now. I call it friends. I don't know what you would call it, Todd. Just acquaintances, the guy I know.
Oh, Rob, we're friends, buddy.
All right.
I don't have very many friends, so this is pretty nice to hear this, really. Makes me feel good, actually. Thank you, Rob. And
you see, I'm
part of your sales. This part of your sales tools is to make people feel good. I love, because you're doing it.
Oh, good. Good. Well, we want to be the salesperson that people love. So you can see, Todd, I'm wearing your brand right here. This is a T-shirt.
See that? I got you one of those, huh? A long time ago, or?
Yeah, and I think you made me pay for it retail.
Yeah, right. I doubt it. Hey, I see all the sports stuff behind you.
Yeah.
This is a pretty challenging time for the sports industry. I know you're still being successful with your company because I've been following you, but man, a lot of us guys that like sports, I mean, it's kind of confusing. We don't know what's really coming, man. It's kind of scary times, huh?
There have been, I don't think there's anything like this in the history of sports. We've had wars. We've had, 9/11. We've had other civil unrest in cities. But we've had two really blows to the gut in 2020. We have the pandemic, which is creating all kinds of uncertainty. And then we now have, in some parts of the country, we have, demonstrations that are right downtown where a lot of these sports venues are located, which make it difficult to promote, family entertainment necessarily.
You know, thankfully those two don't ever touch, because I've heard that if you're protesting that the virus won't spread, because that's what I'm hearing. I mean, it doesn't spread if you're protesting. It only spreads if you're on Memorial Day.
Got it.
Things like that.
Got it. Are we going to talk politics?
FYI. No, we're not. We're not going to go into politics.
Well, I can tell our viewers, if you ever want to have a long conversation with Todd Hoffman, he's got some opinions on politics, and they're always fun conversations with you, Todd. So, Todd, you are from Sandy, Oregon, and you put Sandy on the map. If anyone's ever been to Mount Hood, Oregon, or Mount Hood, to go skiing, they typically have to go right through Sandy, right?
Yep.
So
we're that little tourist trap that slows you down, and then you have to stop and buy either Joe's Donuts or the Shell Station Burrito, or, you know, there's all kinds of little tourist traps on your way through. We slow you down, try to get some of your money on your way through. That's what we do.
There's always a great Dairy Queen too. And yeah. And what is that Jane's place called?
Used to be called Calamity Jane's, but I don't think it's in business anymore. It's I don't know. They kind of went a little downhill on the burgers. So,
well, their milkshakes.
Don't stop there. Oh yeah, milkshakes are great.
So Todd, let's talk about the thing that most people are interested when we talk about Todd Hoffman and your background, and that is the making of Gold Rush.
Right.
It's in its what, 9th or 10th season in 2020?
I think it's 10. I retired a couple, 2-3 seasons ago, so I did about 8 seasons with it.
Yeah.
Still get paid for the show. Because I'm the creator of the show. But the biggest show in the history of one of the biggest media companies in the world was created by me in Sandy, Oregon. Now, having said that, it's not that I'm this great television mind. This was the first show I've ever got on the air. But it kind of shows that, that every average, everyday person has the opportunity now to actually reach out and do certain things like that, And I attribute a lot of that to some of the choices that I made, but also to my faith and the idea that I believe was brought to me by God. And a lot of people don't believe in God, and it's kind of weird to say these things, because I'm not that corner street preacher, but that is the truth. And regardless of how much billions of dollars that his discovery is made on my idea, at the end of the day, it was not created by them. It was not created in New York or LA. It's created in a small town by a chubby kid with a dream, which is really cool because it does give people hope that, they too can do certain things, even in Hollywood and even, anywhere you can do it. If you make the right decisions and put in the right principles, and then also, I think too, you got to have a little bit of supernatural help, or you just be extremely lucky. But I found that the harder you work is the more lucky you get. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit, if you would, about the origination. When you talk about you got maybe some divine help along the way, first of all, weren't you in kind of a, I won't say a bad place, but around 2008, when the economy went south, you had lost a lot of the business that you were involved in then, which was in the aviation industry.
Yeah.
And you were kind of forced to start thinking about next steps, right?
Yeah, I was thinking about next steps. As you can see, I still live at this airport. I was able to hold on to this airport because of Gold Rush. But things weren't going good. People were losing hope. Everybody was just, all the money had locked up, everything was just down, big time recession. And, I just kind of went for it. I went out, I took the last bit of money I had, put this show together. I did not go through Los Angeles, which is kind of the hub for reality TV. As you had, you had Orange County Choppers, you had Monster Garage. You had a Deadliest Catch. You had certain shows that were all kind of created and controlled by just a few people down in LA, kind of the gatekeepers. Like, as in sales, sometimes you get these people that have kind of like a monopoly on certain things, right? So I went around the horn. I actually went and brought in a production company out of London, a little tiny company who is now sold for, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars on the back of Gold Rush. But they were able to help me formulate, and I was able to quickly come up to speed and learn how the game goes. But we came through Discovery Channel from Europe. And so we were able to bypass kind of that LA syndicate and come in from a different angle. And that's, you know, and like when I do sales with any kind of company, I always kind of look for that's like, is there a crack in the side window that I can sneak through? Or can I piggyback with, you know, like you used to work with some of these big mining companies, like, you know, and I don't even know if you know it, but I'm setting you up because I want to piggyback because I need some knowledge that you have because of this new mining product that I have. And I need to kind of need a little bit of help. We'll talk about it later. But that's the thing, is always look for the opportunity on how you can go about it a different way so that you're in the niche. You know, I've always made money in the niche. Like it's, if you're in the stream with all the other salmon and you're new and you're this little tiny salmon, there's a good chance you're going to get eaten. You're a good chance you're not going to make it up that waterfall or get grabbed by a bear, right? So you got to kind of find a different angle and a different approach. And that's what I did. And I've always been able to do that. And I think that's why I was like a pretty decent point guard in college is that I think I'm always looking for that other way to score or whatever that's outside the norm. Right. And that's why, and I know you're the same way, and that's why you've written your book. I know that's what, you know, a lot of your principles are about, is to give those people that advantage to try to get around the mainstream. And that's kind of how I got Gold Rush started. Is I went through England. I went through a little company and we went to Discovery Channel and sold the show in an unorthodox way, in a very niche way. And we went around the monopoly. We went around and went kind of went through the side door into Hollywood through the side door.
So you're a disruptor, right? And
I have been a disruptor since the day that my teacher said, Todd, you're disrupting the class. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, everything's going smooth and I'm trying to figure out a way. It's like, how do I break up this monotony a little bit? So I guess I am a disruptor. And I know all these people have all this lingo nowadays. I'm a disruptor. It's like, no, you're not. You look just like the other guy that said he was a disruptor. So then there's guys like me, and we really are disruptors. We're like, we're lucky that we're not in jail. That's how disrupting we are.
Can we get some more detail on how you approach that that production company? Obviously, you didn't have a track record of being in show business, right? Producing shows or whatever. Yeah. So you would think that most people, if they got a call from someone like you whose name they've never heard, from a town in a state they've never been to, they would basically tell you to get lost. Don't waste our time. We're struggling enough as it is. We don't need to, you know, voluntarily bomb on our next project. So you had to have said something. Yeah. You had to have done something, a tactic that you used. If you could share any of those details with us, that'd be really interesting.
Number one, I presented them an opportunity that they've never heard of. And number two, they believed in me that I was actually going to go accomplish that goal. Now, did I have enough money to go do that? Barely, maybe. I was just too stupid to know, really, that I didn't, right? And you can look back through this, you know, they go on these things and they all talk about how great they were putting the show together. I had to force them to come and do this teaser. And the teaser is about a $10,000, $15,000 investment. So you have a Bible of the show that you write out. Then you have a teaser. And that teaser is your calling card to all the networks. They look at this teaser. you know, it's timing. You know, you got a recession, gold's taken off. You got this guy that's going to throw caution to the wind and go gold mining. So timing, you know, it's got to be relevant to what's going on today, you know, and you got to be damn convincing that you actually are going to go do exactly what you said you were going to do. And so when I forced them to actually fly all the way over here, which I forced them, because I told them in the last, I have emails that Shane that says basically, if you don't show up next week, I'm picking a different production company. Okay. I threatened them. They showed up and then they watched me drop an I-beam right across my dad's Mercedes. And they knew right then and there, this guy's not playing, right? And so, like, I said, listen, they're like, what are we doing here? Are we going to do a documentary or are we going to do a reality show? I said, well, I'm going to drop that I-beam right across Jack's Mercedes-Benz. You tell me what you think we're going to do. And they're like, oh, geez, we're getting their cameras ready. And like, so we shot a teaser. We put it together and the teaser was just phenomenal. That's our calling card. Yeah. Everything was right. Timing's right. Teaser's right. Several networks wanted to buy it. We picked Discovery Channel for one simple fact. They're a big company and they have more money. And away we went, right? First year, I lost money. You have to be willing to, you know, second year, I think I lost money. Third year, we're coming out of the hole. Fourth year, then we all started. Then the machine's going. You have to be dedicated. You have to be dedicated and willing to go to the 100th mile and get it right. Stay late. Do all the things that a small business does. Sacrifice. And then you're the one in 10,000 TV shows that makes it. I mean, it's really not, the odds are not in your favor in TV. Now I can do it again, but that's only because I know what I'm doing, right? But it's hard, very hard.
Hard game. You know, reality TV has been, I guess the first reality TV that really went big, I'm thinking is Survivor, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right? Mark Burnett, and I know you've had some dealings with him in your career. Is reality TV like professional wrestling, Todd? Or
some of it is. Some of it's really bad, right? In the mining thing, is everything real? No, it's not 100% real. The cameras aren't always on. The sound's not always working. You got to connect the dots. Is it all fake? No, it's not all fake either. Right. But to glue a television show together with a story and to follow the storylines and things like that, you do have to connect the dots. So I never said it's 100% real. It's not. And when I watch what's going on now and all these other shows and stuff, it's like I can tell like that these guys are, you know, almost reading their lines. It's bad. So,
yeah.
I would like to, I'm going to try to relaunch again next summer. I've had two networks looking at it. I've never been able to close the deal because I'm not willing to go back on just regular terms. And when you are a man of faith or you have actually something to say and you don't care just about being famous and you believe that you're going to die and go to heaven and stand before God, right? You can't just go on TV and just do what the networks would love to see you do. And because morally, you really can't do that. So if I come back on TV, it's going to be on my terms. And they don't want to give you your terms. They don't want to give you control over the edit. Because maybe you feel like you need to say something and they're like, I'm sorry, or maybe I need to pray right now. I just feel broken and I just want to pray to God. And, you know, the world doesn't really want to go into those types of areas. And so, you know, I'm not going to go back on TV unless it's on my terms. And that's hard to do. It's hard to do business on your terms, Rob. You know, I know you've experienced that. I mean, you tell me, how do you do as a man that has a faith, it gets hard to do business out there, right? So the reality TV is no different. It's actually a lot worse, you know?
Well, in fact, you said at the outset here that you felt that there was some, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but some, a little bit of divine intervention to get you where you are, whether it's inspiration or revelation or just an impression that you had. If it's not too personal, can you help us understand what that looks like? What does that feel like? What does that sound like when you feel like, you know what, I'm being directed to take a, to take this particular route right now?
I don't know, to be honest with you. And I've always worried, wanted to know, because there's I'm an evangelical Christian, right? In this world, there's all kinds of denominations. There's people that are super Pentecostal, and they come to me all the time and they say, you know, God told me this about you. And I always take that with a grain of salt, because if God was telling some guy about me, why didn't he just tell me directly, right? So I take it with a grain of salt, but I do have several things that people have come up and said, and they were prophetic, what you call prophetic words. I take it all with a grain of salt, because I've been walking with God since I was very young, right? And I'm no super Christian. Okay. And when people put themselves on a pedestal, you got to understand one thing is that for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Nobody is better than anybody else. Right. We're all children of the Lord. Right. So, I came out of a real tough time with my marriage, and I really prayed and asked the Lord for guidance. And I knew when I got the idea of Gold Rush, I knew that it had something to do with the Lord. I really did. And I can't put my finger on it how or why. I just, at the time, I just knew. And I think God talks to all of us, but I think he talks to all of us differently, right? So in the Bible, it's happened too, a lot of times, sometimes in dreams. Sometimes he actually had an animal talk to somebody, right? So I think that God works with each of us differently. So at that particular time, I knew that I was going to create this show. I knew that it was going to be successful. I actually went to my church, to my pastor. It was so heavy on me. And I said, I'm going to tell you something that sounds really crazy. I'm starting a TV show, and it's going to be huge. And I just don't know if I'm prepared to deal with this. And he just looked at me like, You are insane, Todd, you know. It's never going to happen, right? So, you know, I think everybody's experience is going to be, a little journey is going to be different. Mm-hmm. The one constant is that I follow the Bible, and the Bible is the same. You know, God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and that he is my hope. It's not gold. It's not, you know, you're going to die and stand before God, and all the things that we've sold, the things that you and I love to do, we love to sell. We love, your passion is selling, Rob. I know it. I know, I mean, your business is built around it, but you know, you and I are going to die and stand before God, and we're not going to be able to take any of this with us, right? So, but for me, it was in how I did my TV, how I did, how I, and that's where I felt like I did, in a lot of ways, in Gold Rush, I did very well representing the faith. In a lot of ways, I didn't. I looked back, or the edit got twisted, and they twisted things. They made me say things I didn't say, and just, you know, inferred things. So that's what really frustrated me about the business, is they want the kind of the lowest common denominator. They want you, they want, the viewer wants this bloody payoff. They want to see, you know, me berate somebody and leave them bleeding in the ditch and move on to the next victim, right? That's what they, that's what you see in Gold Rush from some of the characters. And for me is, I can't do that. You can't have a faith and leave a guy in front of million, literally 170 million people worldwide would watch me, that, and they love us, tell a guy he's a loser. And he has to leave the show, go back into his real world, and it be damaged. His character's damaged and things like that. And reality TV, that's what it's based on. So yeah. That's what it's based on. Yeah. It's based on watching somebody puke and get some sick thing out of it, right? So, but then there's this other element. They're encouraged by reality TV. And see a guy try hard. And see a guy try to make it. Also see a guy fail. How does he deal with his failure? Also, you know what I mean? Yeah. These are the things that I want to portray. And there's a reason why I'm not on TV the last 2-3 years. Because it's not because I haven't been trying to get my show back on. It's that I'm not allowed to put my show back on the way I want to put my show back on. And I won't compromise. I'm not going to compromise, okay? I'm debt-free. I have money. I don't care. I really don't care. I'm being a good husband. I'm being a good father, best I can. Living life. I'm doing good. And it's like, if the Lord gives me another opportunity to bring Hoffman Gold back on the air, it'll be because the world needs to see it, or the world needs to see something that I'm going to bring. And I'm just crazy enough to go do it. I'll live in a trailer for 6 months and go kick butt and dig gold, raw gold out of the ground. And you know, doesn't matter. I'll do whatever it takes. If there's a message that I feel like God wants me to bring to the world through that medium, because there's no other medium in the world that you can reach. I used to reach 170 million people. There's nothing else out there that could go. I was in 120 languages. My fat butt was in Japanese and Chinese, like, right? There's no other medium that can reach that many people. So it is special, but it's also can be used for evil too. And there are a lot of shows out there that are just not good for you. Not good for you to watch, you know? So,
Todd, I remember our listeners and our viewers don't know this, but I was able to watch you on set. You and I actually made an attempt at a project together. But through those experiences I had with you, a couple of things that I think are worth noting for your fans. And that is that, first of all, you would often tell me that if there's no conflict, then there's really no show, right? If there's no conflict, then the producers aren't interested. So it seemed like every episode had to have a conflict, to end, you know, maybe end on a cliffhanger, of course. Mm-hmm. I'd like to kind of just bring that idea into the world of business. Where there is conflict, there's usually no business, right? There's no partnership, there's no relationship, there's no sale. Okay. That's a very different part, very different dynamic between entertaining people and actually developing a real relationship with them, where there's a, you know, there's a transaction made where both sides are happy. So anyway, just hearing you talk reminds me about that lesson you taught me about reality TV. The other thing is that it was really hard work. Though you were in show business and are in show business, it's not glamorous. I remember being with you a week or so before you'd have to go back out on the mine site for the next season. And you would go out, of course, months before we'd actually start seeing the episodes on television. And to see you leave, and I could see it in your face that, you know, man, this is hard to go out there in the middle of nowhere, leave my family for the most part, you know, live in a trailer. You know, I may not make much money doing it this year. I'm taking a big risk. So it's not just Todd gets to have a green room and people are feeding you grapes in between takes, is it?
Boy, that would be nice. Yeah. No. And it's hard too, because you have to like worry about the bills. You have to worry about being a husband, a father. You have to run the show. You have to run the mine. You have personnel issues. Everybody's fighting. Everybody's always, you know. And then you got to you got to get the goods, right?
Yeah.
It's either high or low, but if it's in the middle, if it's just like, eh, it's just okay, they turn the channel. So you're either heading to the top or you're heading to the bottom, and you'll see it zigzag through the episode. You kind of wonder how that works. There's an equation for that. Just like in sales, like when you're going in for sales, you better have your game face on, right? Because there's an equation that you have built with your company that results more than not into a successful sale, right? And that's it. It's getting that game down and solving an issue for a company at the end of the road, that it's the X and O's. Does that save them money? Does that help them sell more seats? Does that, you know, what is it that's going to help them? Are you adding, you know, value or not? So with Discovery Channel, I went through one president after another. But what I was always known for is I always gave them the goods, right? I'll stay longer. I'll shoot longer. You know, whatever it is, I would deliver, right? I delivered you a good episode. 165 episodes or something like that is what I did. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about TV. I learned a lot about, you know, episodic structure. Just everything, how it all goes together and everything. That, you know, to be able to look under the hood on something like that, to be able to look at the reality TV contracts, to go in and fight them for your pay is fun. It's like it's all business to me, right?
Yeah.
Good business, fun business, very interesting. People come to me all the time. They pay me money to sit. I give them 3 hours. Okay, and they pay me thousands of dollars, and they sit there and I explain to them how reality TV works, and they're taking notes the whole time because I'm ADD and I'm going through it. This is how it goes. This is how it goes. This is how it goes. This is what you're going to run into here. This is how the contract. This is how they'll try to get you. Watch out. Watch out for that. This is your team. This is how many people can be on camera. This is how you do a scene. This is how you do that. This is how, you know. And at the end of 3 hours, I'm tired. I want to go take a nap, right? They get 3 hours and get on there. I don't care. Go back and get on your plane and get out of here because it's a lot. And I paid in blood and sweat and tears to learn that. Like your book and all the things that you're bringing to these people, you didn't just sit there and think it up. You lived it, right?
Right.
You lived it by doing things right, Rob. Even you, Rob, with all your fancy hair and everything. You did some things wrong and you learned how do you sell? What is it? What drives it? Right. And that's what's cool, you know, with you and me is that we're both salesmen. We may be selling different things. We all have different styles too. Right.
Right.
My style, I've lost a couple deals, you know, with these TV guys. Cause the first thing you think, you know, I come in and I say, you know, One company is they have horrible TV shows. And I said, you're not reaching middle America. Your shows do not reach middle America. I said, what I bring to you is I am middle America. I am your fan base. I am that guy. So who better to bring you the entertainment than a guy from that world? And I said, and that offended them. Because they felt like they grew up in LA and they know TV for a guy that lives in deep south, that they know what that guy wants to watch. And they bring one goofball show after another and they wonder why they don't have ratings, right? And I say, listen, you want ratings? Go with me. I'll bring you ratings because I know what people want. And that's what's happening right now. We're in a recession. We have a freaking pandemic. We have civil unrest. You're a racist. If you don't agree with their method, you're a racist. You know, everybody's getting called a racist. You know, my old roommate, black guy's got called a racist. It's like, what? It's like my brother-in-law is a teacher, Democrat. He got called a racist the other day. And he calls me. It's like, dude. I could call the racist. I said, dude, you're the least racist person I've ever met. Dan, I go, You know, I'm like, he goes, I don't know what's going on out here, you know? And I'm like, dude, it's a lot of anarchy. It's scary. You know, they're going in and just, I don't mind, dude, a good protest. Everybody's for a peaceful protest. That's pretty American. I'd fight to protect that right. But when it gets to the point where you're going to actually take over public buildings that you don't own, and you're going to destroy property and people's dreams, little businesses and things like that, and you better have the police there to protect those people. And when you just walk the police out and give it and turn over, you know, our city to people, that is just, you know, that is where I have to decide, what are we going to do about that? And I don't know. You know, do we get people together and start a vigilante squad? I don't know. Let's hope not. Jeez.
Well, but you've,
you know, what do you do? It's like business is hurting out here, Rob. It's getting crushed out here in Portland.
Well, you've got your upbringing obviously has a huge role in the way you look at the world, the way you look at your faith and your family. Jack, your dad, has played a prominent role in the show. And by the way, I hope your parents are well, sweetest people. Talk to us a little bit about growing up in the Hoffman home. Did you always have a great relationship with your dad, or was that also just,
you know, my dad came from that era where they just don't talk a lot about it. I remember a lot of times when my dad did things, he tried little businesses and things. He was a real estate guy. He wasn't designed to sell real estate. The only guy in my family was designed for real estate was my great grandfather, Ralph. My grandfather was a horrible realtor. My dad was a horrible realtor. And for some reason, they had a real estate company. So they weren't really geared for, you know, what their skill set was. And that's huge when you're trying to, put a business together and everything. So growing up with my dad, we were poor. We didn't have a lot of money. You know, we dug sewers. We had a little excavation company. We had a little dump truck. No, we weren't poor. We weren't rich. We were poor, you know? So, you know, we didn't have these big long talks with each other and all this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It was more like kind of an understanding. He was always faithful to my mom. He brought us to church. I drowned as a child. Probably explains a lot, but they pulled me out of the pool and my dad recommitted his life to God when I started breathing again. It was kind of a turning point in our life, for his life, and he followed God. He was a very faithful man, followed God. My parents have been married, I don't know how many years. It hasn't been perfect, but, you know, he and my father, like, always, it didn't matter, red, yellow, black, or white, didn't matter. He would always help somebody. Didn't matter. Mm. You know, we weren't raised in, like some of these guys from, you know, these, like, a racist family or any of that. We just wasn't like that. You know, we loved God. We knew we all needed grace and faith. And so it was a good faith upbringing. My parents took me out of public school, went into a private school, little Christian school. There's times we couldn't pay our tuition and things like that, but I knew that if I could just make it to a certain point, I was going to be a business guy and make the money, bring in the money. Well, and the most money my family ever made was when we started doing business. So
did you always want to be an entrepreneur, or did you want to be a television star? Which came first?
I like the medium of TV. I don't like being a TV. So I'm not really a celebrity. I'm kind of like a D-lister, what you call, or whatever. But I don't like that part of it. But I do like to represent, being able to represent some of the cool things about being a patriot, about being a man of faith and loving your wife and, like, So that is cool, being able to represent it. It is cool in a business entrepreneurial sense, because I can go sell any, I can go into access people and businesses easier. And so that is cool. And that's been really fun. And let's be honest, you know, people say it's like being rich isn't everything, but I'll tell you what, having money is a lot better than being poor. I'll tell you, I don't care what they try to tell you. That's not good. It's like being poor sucks. Okay. So you get out there and you try to slay the dragon, just like you're doing, I'm doing, to try to provide for our families. But at the, you know, I think there's a deeper root, and I know you feel it too, is to help others. And some of these kids, I know you're a professor, being able to help other people and bring them up and give them tools to be successful is fun. There's something really cool about it. Also, it feels like you're living out your faith when you do that. So people, you know, like people will come to me and they'll go, man, I just need an opportunity. I just don't get any opportunities. And I say this, if the opportunities that were given to you are equal, the amount of opportunities that are given to you are equal to the opportunities that you have created for other people, how many opportunities would you be worth, you know? Yeah. And they kind of look, because they don't have, they think about themselves and their problems, and they've never opened the door for one other individual. And they sit around worrying about how much money they're going to make, but they've never reached out to help anybody. They've never tried to get another guy a job. They've never called their friend and have them, you know, get them work. I do it all day long. Yeah. People come to my house all day. A guy just came to my house to teach him how to shoot his gun. We also talked about politics. He wanted to know if I should invest in this movie that he's got going. And I sent him out to my shooting range. He's scared with what's going on. So I helped him with safety. I told him how to protect his house. I also helped him on the movie. That happens to me all day long. People come to me all day long because they know I'm here to help them, right? And because of that, I know God sees my heart and he says, okay, I have opportunities come across my desk all day long, but I'm also busy helping other people. So like, there's gotta be a godly principle. There's gotta be something about that in the Bible. I can't pull the verse right now, but I guarantee you that my opportunities are in direct correlation with the opportunities that I give other people and the amount of people I help. Now, I don't know for sure, but that's how it works with me. And I would suggest everybody, you know, because if God sees your heart, if there is a God and he is seeing your heart, who does he want to help? Want to help the guy that's out there trying to help other people? Do you want to? Yeah, I kind of think you would, yeah. Right? So that's a philosophy in investing and entrepreneurship or whatever you call it. And it's an investment into sales. I would help that company, whether they buy my equipment or not. If you are really sold out to help that guy, maybe it's a competitor's equipment in that particular situation works better. And you just look the guy in the eye and say, listen, buying our stuff isn't the best. Your situation, you need these guys. Right. So yeah,
I think Todd, that principle you're talking about, I believe the same is true, that that when you help another person, you are by extension helping your maker, right? And he recognizes that, because if we do believe we're all in this together and that we all come from the same place, it would stand to reason that when we're helping each other, we're helping our brothers and our sisters. And there's a common father that we all share, and he likes to see that. And I think you're right. I think he takes care of those who take care of others. So that's a good principle to live by. And you become less insulated, right? And And I have people in my own life that are struggling right now with whatever it could be. And it's a real struggle to get outside of yourself because you think that's counterintuitive. Why would I spend time helping other people when I'm struggling myself right now? But I think that that principle still holds true. The more you seek to lift up other people, the more you find that divine help lifting you up, right?
I think so. And it's hard to be depressed when you're actually in service for others. Like, and that's the first thing people's coming at. Man, I'm getting depressed. Okay, well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go volunteer somewhere. They're like, what do you mean volunteer? I'm gonna sit around and be depressed. Like, I want you to volunteer. It's hard to be depressed when you're actually volunteering and helping other people, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and they can kind of get outside themselves.
And you see their challenges, and sometimes yours don't look so big by comparison. Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. And then you can start seeing some of the ways, you know, that you can be thankful. You're like, geez, you know.
Well, Todd, you have used your influence. You have used your treasure to help a lot of people, especially those who are recovering from some type of an addiction. Can you share a little bit of that with our audience?
So I had a group of guys that I've been friends with, and they're all in the recovery space. They're counselors, and they're all in recovery. And they came to me, and they said, hey, we want to start our own treatment center. And I'm like, well, how do we do this? And they said, well, you know, you got to do this, got to hire this, got to do that, you know, and all the things. And so I said, I will throw in with you guys. And I put up the money and we started a treatment center. Immediately we got sued, been through one or two lawsuits. And it just, it's been super hard. The billing company, the first billing company we had, they went sideways on us, and we had to get a new billing company. We had to put more money in. It was really difficult. And then I had this dad come up to me, and he just said, I need to talk to you. And he just looks at me in the eye, and he said, you saved my daughter's life. She was on heroin. Came into your clinic, spent time with her, you loved her, and you saved her life. And I just want to tell you, thank you. There's really no other way I can repay you. I just want to tell you thank you that you saved my daughter's life. And I'm like, it puts it all into perspective because I have a 12-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 21-year-old. And you look at that and you're like, oh my gosh, I look at this as helping people, but it's also a business. But it's a business in saving lives. So it's like, I can't not make this successful. I cannot not make this successful, regardless of what happens or how many times this happens, whatever. And that's when we said, you know what? You come hell or high water, Sober Living Oregon Recovery Center will stay open no matter what. We'll have the best doctors. We'll have the best counselors. We'll have the best this, that, and the other. We're the third largest, maybe the second largest treatment center in all of the state now. And we're saving people's lives. I have 53 patients right now fighting for their life, right? So we house 160 people, 40 women and 120 men. That after they're out of treatment, we get them jobs. We get them like... It's unbelievable. And all my partners are rough and tumble. Like, they've all been in jail. But that, what a superstar team, man. Our doctors, our counselors are, they're the best, man. It's like, and I'm not even in recovery. I don't drink. I don't do anything except for overeat a little bit, a lot. And so, excuse me, I have hay fever, but I don't know. It's an honorable business. It's tough. There's a lot of shady stuff. There's a lot of hurts. You're dealing with darkness. You're dealing with, you know, people that just are, they're dirty. People and their problems are dirty, and it's hard. And it takes a toll on you, and it's hard. it scars you. But, you know, sometimes doing the good work, the frontline guys are the guys that are the toughest, and they're the guys with the most scars. They're not the prettiest guys. Like, I could take my staff and we would, you know, go into a church and probably somebody would probably say, somebody said the F word. Like, you know, I'm like, dude, we're dirty. We're hardcore, but we save lives. We're frontline guys, and we're doing it, man. So I was able to get involved in that. If I do my new show, I'm going to have people from recovery on the team up in Alaska with us digging. And so, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And I'm super thankful that they asked me to do it. We're not the best treatment center in the world. We're still learning, but right now we're just doing really well. And our billing comes right out of your neck of the woods. All of our billing's done there in Salt Lake. And yeah, been really cool.
Congratulations. That's fantastic. That's really commendable. And more power to you and those people who work with you on that. I got to ask you too, Todd, it's a bit of a offshoot, but it's a divergent question. You talked about some of the people, you know, you may attend a church together and they're a little rough. You've always had a persona of looking a little rough, right? And part of that could be the character that you play on television. And I don't mean to say it's not Todd Hoffman, but, you know, in business, we've often been told that you have to look the part, right? Whether to get the job or to get the sale. Can you just talk a little bit about that? How has that worked for you in your career? Because you've made a conscious choice that you yourself are a physical brand, right? And when you see Todd Hoffman, he's very recognizable. You and I have eaten together many times in public places when people have immediately recognized you, right? Mm-hmm. You're hard to hide. So has that been a conscious choice that you've made to maintain that persona, or is it just,
you know, once you get on TV, you got to stick with what you look like as best you can. I'm overweight. I'm bald.
Not entirely. I mean,
luckily I'm good looking enough to pull it off. Obviously I have to tell you, Rob, but, the thing is like everybody, when you think of a sales guy, right? You're tall, gotta be good look. You gotta have these certain things, right? And I just don't believe that, right? Everybody is forgettable. A lot of people are forgettable. Like there's guys come up to me and I don't ever remember even meeting that guy. And they're having a big old conversation. Frick, we hung out for 2 days, I guess. Right? And I'm like, man, that guy's forgettable. In reality TV, and I guess in sales, you either love you or hate you, but you don't want them to ever say, you know, that guy was just okay.
Yeah.
So, like, I'll give you a sales meeting with that. And I won't say who, but I was – as a big, like, rental company. It starts with United, okay? So I went to this meeting. I was there with my buddy, and he was selling them equipment, right? And they buy millions and millions of dollars. And all this guy at this rental company is doing is he's making fun of my buddy. I'm there with him. They're making fun of this guy. And he doesn't want to say anything back. I mean, because they buy millions of dollars worth of stuff. He's talking to, and they're inappropriate, you know? And I'm just watching him. And I whispered to him, I go, tell that guy where to stick it, right? And he's like, oh man, they're our biggest customer and this, that, and the other. And I go, man, but golly, why are you taking this from them, right? And I'm telling you never want to be in that position where some guy could take like I would rather go ahead and say, tell that guy where to stick it, and at least that he respects you. Hmm. And then when you go to negotiate on the next deal, right, you might have a little bit of leverage with the guy, right? But you never want to be in that position. I feel like it's better to not be forgettable, right?
Yeah.
Come in and be fun. And just like, listen, guys, I know I'm here to sell this, but dude, what's going on with this, that, and the other? Like, am I right? You know, and like, oh, you know what? Okay, let's get back to let's go back to the presentation. I just wanted to tell you guys that thing. I just had to get that off my chest. And then everybody's like, yeah, that guy's a good guy. I like that guy, right? It's kind of, it's better to be not forgettable. If you're coming in and you're thinking that your stuff, that there's not, if you think that there's not another company that's got the exact same stuff as you or is coming up behind you, and then he'll just do business with you. You don't want to know why he'll do business with you? Because he likes doing business with you. Hmm. And I had people, I put a pump company in Gold Rush, and the owner came running over one day, and he had a $1.2 million purchase order. And he said, the guy said he was going to go with Gorman Rupp, the big boys, or he's going to go with XYZ Pump Company, which is the little guy that I put in the show. Then he said, you know, I'm going to go with you because I like Gold Rush and I love the show. It's my favorite show. And he goes, and I should probably order from Gorman Rupp, but I'm not going to order for Gorman Rupp because you're in my favorite show. And I just like you guys. And I said, see, they're, you know, so they like doing business with you. You need to go out there. You freaking make it an event. Make it so that you're not forgettable. Because they get lots of people at them all day. They're looking at their numbers. Their COVID has kicked them in the you-know-what. They're looking and they're like, geez, man, we got to come back here. We got to come back here. And they, and when it comes down to you and that, what's that company with that guy? I don't remember that guy. But let's cut down. But definitely don't cut Bob at this company because man, he's the funnest guy at the party. He's the guy that shows up. He's the guy that always gives us the best service. And, you know, when it comes down to two things on the line item, I'm going to cut the guy that he doesn't like to hang out with. I'm sorry. It's like it has to do with relationships. In my opinion, it's not always that way. But I sure like doing – I'm about ready to build another building, and I'm getting bids from a couple different guys. And there's this one guy, and I know he's going to be more money, but I'll probably go with him because I get to hang out with him for 3 weeks. He's going to be at my house building this big building. I get to flat out go out there, and we just could get to shoot the bull together, right? So I'll probably go with that guy just because I want to see him – you know, successful too, and get the sale. And man, I sure like being with that guy, right? Man, we had the best time. And it's like, it's not always just dollars and cents. It's relationships. And I've seen that over and over, that guys like doing business with guys they like doing business with.
Yep.
You believe that, Rob? Am I right? Is that part of your book?
Shameless plug right here. Right? Becoming the Salesperson People Love.
Okay. What chapter is that?
It's throughout the book, Todd. You're going to have to read the whole thing. All right?
I don't read books, Rob. I barely can read, Rob. You know that?
I send you an audio.
I write books. I can't even read. I write books. I don't read books.
Yeah, just put some earplugs in and I'll send you the audio version.
Okay, you know me, I'm ADD, I'm not normal. In your book, what would you say is the most important thing that you think maybe I could pick up from your book? Knowing me, right? What is it?
Well,
taking notes, I got my pen.
We have a lot of methods and techniques, but the most important thing we talk about are the principles of selling. And here's a take-home principle for you, Todd.
Okay.
And you know this because you work in the mining business. You're always buying equipment. And you and I have been a part of those kinds of transactions together. More than the actual product, people want to buy the results the product brings. So you don't care what brand of excavator or what kind of bucket you have at the end of that excavator. What you care about is the results it produces for you, right? Is it going to be more efficient on your machine? Is it going to save you money? Is it more safe to operate? Do the parts last longer so you don't have as much downtime? Those are the kinds of things that matter to you. So which brand, which color, where it's made, whether it's, you know, Topeka or Malaysia, you don't really care. All you care about are the results you're going to get from it. So as salespeople, that's what we always have to keep in mind. Don't spend all your time talking about your product features and your SKUs and all those kinds of things, because in the end, that's not as important. What matters is the results your product brings. And the good thing is that if you talk about results, you will get fewer objections, because nobody objects to results, but boy, they can object to product all day, right? So.
Wow. Yeah. That is, you know, I was just correlating that with what I'm doing right now. So.
Yeah, when like you're it. When you're pitching your next show,
I might actually read your book instead of just say I'm going to read your book. But like, I have issues, man. Rob, I got a lot of issues.
Well, we're going to take all that offline here, Todd, because okay. I got to thank you. You've given us some great time. You've given us great wisdom. But you know, you're a risk taker. And you know, as a fellow entrepreneur, how much I admire you for that. To do some of the crazy things that you've done and turn them into success, you're one of those guys who's not going to take his great ideas to the grave with him. Because when you have a great idea, and even if it's not so great, you go. You execute, yeah. Right? You try. And there's less than 1% of the population like you, and that's why I admire you. And that's why you're my friend. And that's why I'm grateful that you joined us today on this podcast.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to your book. And yeah, man, it's great. I appreciate it. I always love talking to you about business and sales and everything else.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it. Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for being a part of this episode of Game Face Execs. If you found any of it useful or helpful, please rate or like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. I always appreciate you referring us to others as well. I'll see you next week. Until then, persuade, influence, inspire.